Well, I certainly think that was one of the wildest games of the year when it comes to experiencing the whole wild roller coaster of emotions. Boy. High highs, some real low lows. The Lucas two-run bomb at the very top, maybe, of that roller coaster, to Jimmy Garcia cleaning up his own mess in the eighth. I mean, the Mariners just inching back one run at a time, like the Terminator. Heinemann snapping his bat and not realizing the ball was going to fall fair, then diving into first to beat the throw. I mean, what a wild, weird game. Like, probably the weirdest, strangest game this season so far. But hey, I mean, it still counts in the win column as one. The Jays pick up their second win in a row, a 6-3 victory to open this three-game set in Seattle as they now improve to 18-20 on the season. You're listening to Jays Talk Show, Ali with you. We're live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on Sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. And again, as with the rest of the games this week, because the Stanley Cup playoffs are in full swing and the Leafs were in action earlier tonight, keeping everyone pretty busy, in addition to it being quite late. Once more, Tom Young and myself here at Baseball Controls. So texts are the way to reach us tonight. 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. We'll get back to taking your calls on the weekend and beyond. So I do promise to read as many of your texts once again as we can squeeze in here tonight. I definitely thought there was a moment during the Jimmy Garcia eighth inning. There was a moment where I did not think it was going to go so well for Toronto sports tonight, generally speaking, especially after Brad Marchand did the thing again. But hey, Jimmy Garcia cleaned up his own mess. Jeff Hoffman came through and the Blue Jays hang on to a 6-3 win. Wild how the narrative of this game changed so wildly, right? I mean, they build, talk about roller coasters, right? They build a 5-0 lead. They let the Mariners just scratch and claw their way back, inching back into it. I mean, something we've been painfully familiar with this season. The offense going ice cold after the Lucas home run. Gausman kind of just, I don't know if he just ran out of gas. It just looked a little shaky at the very tail end of that start. He gets pulled. Like I said, Jimmy Garcia loads the bases, single walk, and then cleans it all up without letting in a run. And at the time, what was a 2-run game. I mean, the Heinemann play with him diving to get aboard at first base ends up being the 6th run to give Hoffman some insurance, which I guess he didn't necessarily need in the end, but just crazy, crazy stuff. 590-590, name and location is where you can reach me again on the text line. And I want to see this one actually made me laugh. Morgan in Antigonish, Nova Scotia. Well, show, I think we can finally put the Show Alley curse behind us after huge back-to-back wins. Barger is a stud. Please make him the everyday third baseman, please. I'll hang up and listen. And there's another one here from Mauricio in Etobicoke. Please play Barger full-time, regular, consistent ABs against left-handed and right-hand, left-handers and right-handers, and give him leeway, give him some confidence, give him some rope. Jimenez, when he returns, plays second. Clement needs to be on the bench or DFA'd. He's been ineffective. I don't know if I'd go like so far to say that Ernie Clement needs to be DFA'd, but I'm with you that like it certainly feels, and again, it's like one game. I think you want to see him do it a little bit more consistently before you get like fully on the Barger train here. But like, I'm definitely not going to argue with the idea that Barger was the story of this game, and it feels like you have a slightly higher ceiling maybe than with Ernie Clement, if that makes sense, right? I mean, and again, you guys, beyond Morgan and Mauricio, what do you guys think about Barger? I would love to know at 590-590, because I honestly think we've had like every possible discussion about him and his offense in particular at this point. And I mean, tonight, right, 3 hits from Barger, all 3 being doubles. He absolutely ripped to the wall, one of them a 2-run double. I know many of you don't care about the exit velo on balls, and I've been trying to be good about not getting too hype about about exit velo, but the third double in the eighth inning was smoked at 116.5 miles an hour. That is the hardest hit ball of his entire career. On defense, too, I mean, we've gotten a little more used to seeing Barger play really great defense, but I mean, even tonight, even for him, he made some great plays, right? He had the great play right at the third base bag, or just past the bag, I suppose, where he leapt up and he stabs the ball out of the air with runners at the corners and 2 outs. So he saved Gausman some runs there. He had a laser beam throw to Vladdy at first. I think Vladdy was joking around mostly on this, but he kind of like takes the glove off and looks at his hand because Barger threw the ball to him so hard. In the seventh inning with Brendan Little on the mound in relief of Gausman at this point, Crawford rifles a ball on the ground right to Barger, who makes the sliding grab on one knee and pops up to shoot that thing to Vladdy again. So just pretty great stuff from Barger tonight. You know what? Why don't we hear a little bit from Addison Barger? We actually have the post-game chat that he did, the very brief one he did with Hazel May. Before we continue chatting about Barger, and I read some more of your texts about the great night from him, let's hear from tonight's third baseman. Three hits, including a two-run double. Here's Addison Barger with Hazel.
Big night for Addison Barger. Three doubles, a couple of RBIs, a run scored, and a fine defensive play. But Addison, before I ask you about your night, what was your reaction standing at third base, watching Jimmy Garcia load the bases there in that eighth inning with nobody out and then managing to get out of it?
Oh, it was just a ton of excitement. So much excitement for him. And that was just huge. I mean, just absolutely exciting.
You were huge for this team tonight. Your third double, Addison, I don't know if you're aware, was the hardest of your MLB career at 116.5 miles per hour. Dan Shulman pointed out your other double was the third hardest of your career. What has allowed you to really drive that ball?
Just putting the barrel on it. It's as simple as that. If I put the barrel on it, it would be hit pretty hard. But just a matter of making good contact more consistently.
We talked about how great your spring was. Addison, what can you tell us about maybe a couple of other things that you were able to translate over to the big league level and have success here?
Yeah, I mean, I've been working on the same things. Popkins has been working with me a ton. He gives me a lot of confidence in the work and to go out there and compete.
Listen, I know you went to high school in Florida, but you were born in Bellevue, Washington. Tell me about who you have here tonight. Is there a whole throng of people here cheering you on?
Yeah, there's a pretty good amount. I got some uncles, some cousins, some buddies. Quite a bit. Yeah.
Well, you certainly put on a nice show for them. Congratulations, Addison. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So there you go. That's Addison Barger chatting with Hazel May of Sportsnet, the great Hazel May. And, you know, it's funny. I think, is that the first time we have heard, I mean, maybe in a post-game interview specifically, but maybe even in, you know, when the players chat with the media, the media availabilities late in games, or pardon me, post-games, even when they've been on the air, is that the first time we've really heard any of the players directly reference Popkins? Maybe, honestly. I feel like I haven't heard that too many times because typically they don't really talk about the hitting coaches all that much. Maybe it means more for Addison Barger, given that he spent a good chunk. I mean, he didn't break camp with the team, and then he spent a good chunk of the season off the hop here. And it's still early goings, early May, but in the minors, right? So, I mean, definitely a positive if he views it as a positive, right? And again, I think the hitting coach conversations, probably to a lesser extent than the manager conversations, but I do feel like those kinds of figures get probably more blame than they deserve and probably don't get enough credit when things go right. But still, I mean, if for Barger to actually go out of his way to mention it, probably does mean something. But again, I mean, this is a guy who has credible power while also, at least right now, right? While Jimenez is on the officially on the shelf, went to the IL earlier today. Stefanik added to the 40-man. Dylan Tate, after we discussed this last night, was the one who got DFA'd. But he has credible power while also being one of the few available infielders while Jimenez is injured. So, I mean, he is, to the texter's points, going to get as many opportunities as he can handle on offense, right? Like, as we have seen, he also has a rocket for an arm, which has been fun to watch on defense. I do think he needs to get on bases at a slightly better rate. But again, maybe tonight is something he can build on. I mean, this team is so desperate for power. And there just aren't a ton of solutions waiting either in the minors or even in free agency. So they need every last piece of offense they can get. So getting it from Barger would certainly be a good spot. 590-590, name and location. Let's go back to the text line. I see Mauricio also saying, I'm glad Roden and Wagner are in minor leagues. They need more seasoning at bats, more training, better coaching. Let's see. This one is from Ben. No texting while driving. I assume this is Ben Schulman. Ben from the Timber Mart broadcast booth says, better to win weird than lose normal, I guess. That tricked me because it said the text line just showed the kind of the cutoff. So I said, Ben from? Oh, where? Oh, the Timber Mart broadcast booth. So I'm assuming that's Ben Schulman. Greg from Saskatoon. Wow, it looked like the Blue Jays were on track to blow it again, but they dug deep, finally beat our biggest nemesis, the Mariners. I mean, certainly the biggest nemesis of the, like, in terms of non-divisional opponents, certainly feels like it's the Mariners, right? Especially when they either go to Seattle, they're playing in Toronto. The wild card defeat of the last couple of years probably does have something to do with that, I would imagine, but you're probably not wrong, Greg. Jay from London, the boys are getting it done. Josh in West Kelowna. That was probably the gutsiest move by John Schneider and leaving Garcia in that inning. Hopefully this is a turning point for Garcia and Hoffman. Do you think Brendan Little should move up to the eighth inning role a bit more often? I kind of wonder if he should be, if not because I think he is necessarily all of a sudden more reliable than Jimmy Garcia, but I do wonder about it, if only because, do you really want Jimmy Garcia and Jeff Hoffman? This is a conversation we've had before. Pitching those kinds of stressful innings when the offense does not give you just enough of a cushion every single time. I would make the argument that the answer to that question is no, right? Not because you just straight up don't trust them necessarily, but just because, you know, would it not make more sense to just try and manage these guys' innings? I mean, this was true even before the Schneeman Grand Slam from last weekend, but they were already then on pace for a ridiculous number of appearances over the course of the whole season, right? So ultimately, I think to Josh's question, you could see them mix it up a little bit more. I mean, Brendan Little, to his credit, he came in for five outs after the 5 1/3 from Gausman. And again, like, tough, stressful innings from Little. And we saw Dan Wilson try and screw with him a little bit, right? He deployed a number of righties and pinch hit situations. Even got Jorge Polanco, who has been really good this year, to turn around and bat from the right side to create a better matchup. And Little largely answered the call. I mean, he did give up that double to Taveras, but he did get Donovan Solano and Dylan Moore both swinging. Ben Williamson, I believe, went down on called strikes. He still got Polanco as well as JP Crawford out as well. So I do think he has jumped up the circle of trust rankings. He probably does find himself in the inner circle of trust. Jimmy Garcia and Jeff Hoffman being in the inner circle was a little shaky after the last week, I admit. And I'm curious what you guys think too. I mean, like, do you still have them both in the circle of trust, period? I think they are still in there, maybe even still the inner circle of trust. I mean, I won't argue with anyone who says they're not in the inner circle, but the outer circle. But I mean, they did come through today. And to Josh's text, I mean, Jimmy Garcia coming in the bottom of the eighth inning, he has 7 earned runs in the previous full inning of work over 2 games worth of appearances coming into tonight. And I have no idea what was going through his mind in that inning. Like, maybe he just wanted to feel alive or something, because single walk. I mean, that was, I mean, and maybe he got hosed a little bit and you saw the ump kind of yelling at John Schneider and Pete Walker. And I do think that pitch was a ball, but it had also not been called a ball all night. So for it to change, I can understand people being a little annoyed. But I mean, I thought after the 98 mile an hour fastball, he had control of that pitch, and then he loses Julio Rodriguez. Not a ton of competitive pitches to Raleigh. You could probably make the argument he was being careful to the Mariners' best hitter. So I kind of understand it. But ultimately, after that, it became apparent that there was just some control issues going on, right? He couldn't control the four-seamer, the sinker. Arm was dragging with the sinker. He couldn't find the control on the sweeper either. And then just found it all in one go. I mean, velo-wise, it was consistent on the four-seamer, right? Like 97 to 99 mile an hour in pretty much all of the deliveries. But that is still one of the wildest half innings you'll see all year in terms of expectations. Like, his stuff looked completely different after Vladdy threw out the runner at home with the bases loaded, and I think it was Mastrobuoni at the plate, right? He was finding the zone. He was commanding those pitches. He was fooling guys. The velo looked good. I mean, that's wild stuff. Similarly with Jimmy, I think Hoffman did not entirely alleviate my concerns that cropped up, but we did see the fastball used to great effect, which we did not necessarily see the last time out. We saw him get on top of the splitter as well, but he got it done tonight. So no complaining from me. All right, let's take a quick break. And on the other side, we will check out the Bet365 standings update, and we'll go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. Got to chat a little bit about Kevin Gausman before we get out of here. And we probably should talk about Nathan Lucas too, right? He did hit a two-run bomb today on a pitch that honestly like wasn't a terrible pitch from Luis Castillo. So still some things to get to on the other side. We're here for about 15 more minutes. You're listening to Jay's Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I mean, he was huge today, obviously, with the way he swung the bat, made a couple nice plays at third. He's that talented. I think it's just a matter of him putting it together. But I think the profile of his at-bats can really help us. And today was a good example of kind of what he can do.
That is John Schneider speaking about Addison Barger, who I think, to the texter's points from the first half of the show, I think it does underline what we were talking about. Certainly sounds like Schneider also believes that Barger, there's more there, right? Not that necessarily he's just going to all of a sudden, you know, shirk the platoon at third and just become the everyday starting third baseman. I'm not sure we'll see that right away. It's possible it happens. It's not like we haven't had this conversation before, right? I mean, like, David Schneider should be the everyday second baseman, or, you know, like, we've had these kind of conversations over the past couple of years, but definitely a good start if you do believe, like some of our texters at 590-590, name and location, that Barger should be getting more run. And again, three doubles from him, a two-run double early in the game. He had another one late in the game that was the hardest hit ball of his career, had some great plays on defense. I think we got to see the full gamut of plays from one Addison Barger tonight. You're listening to Jay's Talk here, of course, on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali here with you for another 10 minutes or so. Before we continue taking your texts at 590-590, let's check out the Bet365 standings update. With Bet365, you can watch thousands of live games, build your own bet. You can even make a bet while the game is still being played. 19 plus, play responsibly, Ontario only. So all of the games, I guess there's one game going on right now. It's pretty crazy one. 14-11, Dodgers over the Diamondbacks. That's a wild game. Bottom of the ninth inning in Arizona. But as far as the American League East is concerned, all of these games are now finished. I'm shocked the Orioles and Yankees games are actually done. I kind of thought they'd be still going, but they were also playing on the West Coast. The Yankees playing the Athletics in Sacramento. The Orioles playing the Angels in Anaheim. The Yankees won. They won 10-2. Over the Athletics. The Orioles won for the first time. They snapped their losing streak. First win for them in, I think, six games. They win 4-1. We have our game tonight. The Blue Jays, of course, winning 6-3. The Red Sox lose in extras to the Kansas City Royals. The Royals beat the Red Sox 2-1. And the Rays hang on for a win over the Brewers. They win 4-3. So as it stands, here is the American League East. The Yankees are 22-16. The Red Sox are 20-20. The Blue Jays are 18-20. The Rays are a game back of the Blue Jays. They are 17-21. And the Orioles are 3.5 games back of the Blue Jays. They are 14-23. So that's a quick check of the Bet365 standings update. Let's check back in on the text line. 590-590, name and location. Tillman, Alberta. I thought Jimmy was going to be voted out of the Circle of Trust, but he showed great character to get out of a situation many would not have. Impressive night for Barger. Hopefully he can build on this and nail down third. Q from Winnipeg. Q texted this in earlier, to be fair, but Q saying, now this is when run prevention baseball is fun. When your bats can get you a comfortable lead, your defense takes over to demoralizing the opposing team and shutting them down. Way to go, Barger, Varsho, and Bichette. And it's true, we've largely only talked about Barger's defensive plays. I mean, gosh, all of them played really, really well. I mean, when it comes to Bo, he had a tough series in Anaheim, right? But tonight gets a couple of hits and the walk. I mean, I think you still need more power from him on offense. I'm not even asking for home runs really at this point. You take the 29 home runs if that comes because that's his career high, but I would just settle for some doubles. I'm not criticizing the results from him on offense. More power would be nice. But I mean, still, Bo making a leaping grab. I like that junction of dirt and grass that would have likely been a bloop single, but he kind of jumps to take that away. And then you got Varsho with a robbery at the wall, a very nonchalant walk back into the field of play afterwards. And then on the very next play, Bo robs J.P. Crawford of a hit as the order turns over. So Gausman got some run support early, but also some wild defensive plays to help him out tonight, which is, generally speaking, good to see after Jimenez was put on the IL. Also, speaking of that Varsho catch, I guess he likes playing in Seattle, because the last time the Jays were in Seattle in 2024, Varsho ran full tilt into the outfield wall to make the grab with, I think, two runners on and two outs. I think that grab ended the inning. So I think must be something about Seattle at T-Mobile Park where that makes Varsho suited to play there, I guess. But good stuff from him. Nathan Lucas, to talk about him a little bit before we get out of here. The pitch he hit out, I mentioned this before the break, was not a terrible throw from Luis Castillo, right? Like, not the best throw he's ever made, but a four-seamer up in the zone, almost right on the inside edge of the zone. Maybe he left it. Maybe it wasn't inside enough. Perhaps, I mean, a little too much in the zone, a 93.4 miles an hour from Castillo as well. But Lucas went to go get that thing. He clubbed it right onto the yellow divider on the outfield wall. So just barely gets it out, but good for him. And I mean, we've spoken about this before, everyone, but this is a guy who generally has not gotten a lot of run at the major league level prior to the end of last season. So I'm glad to see him get more opportunity. He was batting seventh tonight, which I think sounds about right. So I'm not sure we need to have the batting order discussion with him in particular, like kind of like we did, oh, should Varsho bat leadoff or should Springer bat leadoff? Like, I mean, those are conversations I'm willing to have because of the power that's associated with them. Springer, certainly less power, makes great contact. But I mean, even so, I mean, yesterday they had production from the bottom of the order in Anaheim, and today they got an RBI single from Clement and then the homer from Lucas. So maybe if this continues, the conversation about the team having too many, like the quadruple A conversation, maybe could change. I do think it would take a lot in terms of offensive results for us to really fully get to that part of the season. Like, I think it would take more. I mean, Shane from Brockville, I remember Shane texting in last night about this, but like it would take more than an offensive explosion against one of the worst bullpens in the league. And then also I think a little bit more than getting to a scattered Luis Castillo as well. I think I would view it slightly differently if they could have these same results against better pitchers or bullpen relievers. And I mean, like, for example, tonight, until the insurance sack fly from Dalton Varsho, they didn't get it done against, like, Casey Legumina in relief, for example. So that's got to change for the better, but, you know, still something to monitor going forward. Derek in Denfield, Ontario, that scream from Tyler Heineman at the end of the eighth was primal. It's true. He screamed, like, you could hear it. I mean, obviously we're listening to the radio broadcast, but you could even hear it here. Like, you could hear it on the field mics. He was screaming so loud, and I don't blame the guy, because that was really good. There was another one here. Mark in Tilbury. Oh, I just wanted to say hello and appreciate your dedication and effort to these late night games. I'm happy the Jays are back on the right track. I'll say this, Mark, does make it a lot easier when the team wins, right? I think it does make it a lot easier to stay up late when they win, but I do appreciate it. I wanted to also get to Gausman, because Gausman is interesting when it comes to what you've gotten from him over the course of the whole season. So what, two, I guess if you count tonight, three starts ago was the Yankee start, in which the 53-pitch inning. And then you had a start that was squandered last weekend against the Guardians, in which he had 9 strikeouts and over 6 innings of work, and it just did not look particularly great. It did not look particularly great for the offense, I should say, but they squandered his great start. And then you have tonight, 5 1/3, 7 hits, 3 runs, all of which were earned, no walks, which is good, 3 strikeouts. He faced 23 batters, 99 pitches, 64 strikes. It was the rare night in which he looked largely good, got run support, also got wildly good defense to help save some runs. It just feels like it's been well over a year since all three of those boxes were checked in the same game. Now, obviously, again, as we've discussed, in moments, it wasn't perfect, right? The Jays helped Gausman out big time with some massive defensive plays from all of Varsho, Barger, and Bo. But, I mean, he pitched well enough in the biggest moments to avoid a big-time letdown after building a lead against the Mariners team that had won 12 of 17 games coming into tonight, dating back to the last time these two teams played in Toronto, right? And, I mean, this is a Mariners team that had also largely won a lot of those 12 games on the strength of their bats. So, good to see him kind of gut through it, even if he kind of lost the zone a little bit at the tail end of the start. I did think the splitter looked good early. I mean, he got a pair of strikeouts on that pitch in the first couple of innings. First 3 innings, I guess, he used it as the game went on to keep the batters off balance. I mean, we saw that strikeout, his third and, I guess, final strikeout of the game of Leody Taveras to end the fourth inning. He goes splitter, 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 fastball, splitter, splitter, and then he finishes off Taveras with a fastball. So it was good to see him be able to use that split finger effectively, because we've spoken about this before. The primary challenge for Gausman has largely been getting the splitter to split as much as it has in the past, while also knowing that opposing batters are intentionally laying off the split finger and are looking for his non-splitter pitches, i.e. the fastball, right? Maybe the slider as well, which he throws less. But I mean, Gausman has largely become, like, for the most part, a two-pitch player, right? I mean, he usually a two-pitch pitcher, I should say. He has gone in that nine strikeout start, and again, the Jays completely wasted it. He threw 94 pitches, 54 of them were fastballs, and 29 of them were splitters. Tonight, 50 four-seam fastballs, 40 splitters, 9 sliders, right? So again, I think you do want to see you want to see that splitter again split more effectively. But again, in the last like two starts, including the 9 strikeout game from last weekend and tonight, it's started to look a little bit better. Velo was interesting wise because the last time out in that 9 strikeout start, he was firing that fastball around 98 miles an hour, and tonight, until the last few pitches, because he did max out close to 97, 98 miles an hour. But for the most part, he was largely firing around 94, 95. So maybe that played a little bit of a role. But again, Gausman does look good enough, and it was good enough for a 6-3 win. But that does it for us here on the program. Thanks for being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Scarborough on Shepherd Avenue, right down the street from where I live. So shout out to them in particular on St. Clair Avenue and on Midwest Road. Crown is proud to be Canadian-owned and operated since 1986. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local Crown Rust Control Center or visit crown.com. Crown, Canada's number one rust protection. For Ben Schulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, I'm Sho Ali. We are out of here. The Jays have now won 2 in a row. We'll see if they can make it 3 in a row on Saturday night. Bowden Francis will be on the mound against Logan Evans. Have a great night, everyone. We'll talk to you later.